Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
One alive, one dead, one fictional. It's up to you who you choose, you pick them all. It's up to you who you choose, you pick them all. Who you having? Make it who you wish. This is your dinner party, and it's your guest list.
Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Guest List with Jake Lambert, the podcast where I interview comedians to find out who would be their perfect dinner party guests. But they can only pick three. One has to be alive, one has to be dead, and one has to be fictional. This week, we are joined by Mark Simmons. It's a really good episode, so I'm going to keep this intro really quick as well, because it's a long episode. A quick thank you to people who have done the donation thing. Some names, thank you to Robert, Catherine, Michelle, Lauren, Rachel, and someone else who wanted to stay unanimous. Anonymous. Thank you very much. This episode is so fun. Mark is a very funny man, very lovely man. So it was lovely to spend time chatting with him. Check out his podcast, Jokes with Mark, where comedians sort of go on and talk about jokes they couldn't get to work, which I know sort of sounds like you're just listening to bad jokes, but it's them sort of working out how they got them to work or how they can fix them, and they go over them. I'm sure all the episodes are great, but I've also been on it. But listen to anyone that you want to listen to, but I've also been on it. Basically, it's great, and so is Mark, and so is this episode. So please enjoy my conversation with Mark Simmons. Sorry, one quick thing. Please remember to subscribe and share and tell your friends. Thanks. Bye. But how have you been there? You've been doing quite a few online gigs.
Yeah, it's been good actually. I like the Zooms. Mm. I'm a big fan of them now. Do you like them?
I do. I reckon they'll stay.
Yeah, I mean, I will definitely do previews before Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah.
So my plan is to do one every sort of 2 or 3 months to my mailing list. And it just gives me a little goal, something to write towards. And with what I do, specifically with the one-liners, you can get a good gauge of if it's good or not on there. Like,
I think
with some sort of comics, it's probably quite difficult. Because, like, if you're telling a story and then someone laughs halfway through the story and then everyone's sort of attention goes to that voice and then it comes back, you can't get a good gauge. But with one-liners, it's let me talk, punchline, laugh or not laugh, next one. So it works quite nice.
In that sense, I wonder if it sort of actually helped storytellers, storytelling comedians...
write some jokes.
A bit sort of... to do some work.
You're saying that those comedians aren't real comedians because there's no jokes. So that's what you're saying, isn't it?
You know, there's only one, those sort of personalities. But yeah, because you do, because the timing is a bit off. In fact, I would say Zoom gigs have helped my delivery because I don't do one-liners so much anymore. I think that it's made me sound more conversational, which you have to do, I think, to deliver Zoom material if you're not doing a one-liner, because you have to sort of be like you're just sort of pondering,
because
having a conversation.
I literally say, "Here, I'm going to do some jokes." So I have to do that now. So I have to basically say, this is what this is. And then they get on board with it. It's strange,
which,
isn't it?
I reckon doing actual stand-up would, one, be a good opener. But it does sound like you're slagging off the previous act.
Yeah, I know. I think I have done that before, said it and gone, oh, that does sound bad. Okay, so I'm going to do some jokes. You know, anyone know what they are?
The last guy didn't. I actually did say that once. I did that with Mark Dolan was comparing like a competition final I was in, and he was so bad and he just hadn't got a single laugh. And then I went out and just didn't even say hello. I did a one liner and then went, it's a joke, isn't it? I said, it's nice to have the first one of the evening.
How did that go down?
Good. And it's
because it's one of both ways, because if they kind of like him, but weren't laughing,
yeah,
that could be bad for you. But if they were thinking, we need some comedy, then obviously that's you're releasing attention then, aren't you?
It was the Amused Moose final. So I think it was quite sort of industry, enough people to sort of understand what he had failed to do and what I was happy to sort of reference. I think it was also came from anger, because I remember Flo was in the gig and I was at the side of stage texting her. I was texting her to say, this is mad. He hasn't told a single joke. And then I just went out there and did that because I was angry, because I was like, you haven't done your job. I know this is a competition final.
I did that final and Jack Whitehall and Holly Walsh hosted mine. So it's quite a...
So what year did you do it?
09.
Oh, right. I did mine in 1-5.
Oh, well, I did do it. Oh, okay.
Well, did we do that for that? You have to. We did it because saying you did it in 9 sounds mad. You have to put the O there. I did it in 9.
This sounds like a McIntyre there, doesn't it? Like, why do we say that? We have to say 09. I'll just say 9. That wasn't me trying to do an impression, by the way. That wasn't the world's worst impression. Everyone's like, that doesn't sound even like him.
I'm going to say what I think they could say, and you can imagine it being in their voice.
And funnier. I try not to wear these headphones because loads of people, because they're the ones you poke in your ears.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, they come out of my ears a bit, and a lot of people say it looks like I'm sort of a policeman undercover because I keep putting my finger. It's like I'm listening for the all clear to go.
As undercover police officers go, I reckon a 6'2".
6'4". Actually, 6'3½.
Well, I was imagining you're hunched over, that's all, in character.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, mate. Yeah. And I'll probably have a shorter haircut because I'm undercover.
That is an impressive lot of hair.
I know. I had it cut yesterday. No, I've got my haircut Friday. It's booked in.
Yeah, it looks like we could have cut back to you doing Amused Moose in 9, yeah, and that would have been the look.
it actually is, I think. I haven't really changed my look since 2007.
Would you say you had a look? Actually, that sounded offensive. I didn't mean it to be.
No. I mean, it is a look. But it's not a well-known one. It's not like, I see what he's doing. He's doing a bit like that person. I think it's a unique look.
Yeah.
I actually did a joke about. I did a joke about that in one of my shows. I had a thing where I was getting advice from other comedians, and throughout the show, and then just on bits of paper, and then I couldn't find one, and I was looking everywhere for it. And I mean, I don't want to blow smoke up my bottom, but my acting was pretty good. People were genuinely thought I'd lost it, and I was going through the crowd saying, "Oh, I'd lost." I might have been walking along here, might have fallen out, looked outside. Eventually, I came back, and the advice was from Noel Fielding, and it said, you need to have a good look. But because of the length I'd gone to, it got a not really nice reaction, because it just fooled everyone, because I was just panicking.
That's great. That's a lovely bit. Was that in an Edinburgh show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't doing that at a comedy store. I don't know why Don hasn't called back. but annoyingly, I've got loads of those bits I did in Edinburgh. And they're my favourite bits. I love those bits because you're kind of toying with people, but you're still doing a joke.
Yeah, that's great fun. And you need something like that in Edinburgh.
Mm. Yeah,
something to change it up.
If I ever got reviewed, that would be quite important. But I never do, so... I think reviewers, once they've watched a one-liner comic, it must be so difficult to write a different review the next time you see them. Because like my ability to write jokes won't have changed. Do you know what I mean? It shouldn't have got worse. Like, if anything, it should have got a bit better. But how many ways can you describe? Yeah, he does a punch set up, he does the punchline, and they laughed.
Yeah.
And he does another one of those. So then those extra bits of what would add to that, give them something else to talk about. So if any reviewers are listening, there's something for you to write about if you want to come and see me.
Because it's true, because either they're going to say he has no opinion on anything, which is clear throughout, or his opinion changes literally from joke to joke.
I mean, I had sometimes if I get the order wrong, which sometimes that happens, like something happens in the room and you just jumped over bits. And then I have to say to the audience, oh, I've got a girlfriend in this one. Like, because I told them earlier, I'd just broken up with my girlfriend. And like, oh no, I've got one in this one. But they kind of, if you work with that, that actually kind of adds to it.
Yeah. And it's actually, I reckon that you are the great balance for these comedians who sort of open up too much or give you nothing but opinions for an hour. You are the perfect, is it antidote?
I guess.
Actually, I remember someone saying it to me once going, oh, you know, can you just talk about things? I'm like, yeah, but it's not as separate enough from these sort of real autobiographical or, you know, these sort of political stand-ups, because there's a little bit of, you know, it goes between the lot, but yours is so the other way that it is actually like you are the good. I think it was, what was it? Catherine Bohart was calling me like a palate cleanser, but I think you're the palate cleanser because it's so far and it is just, it's just purely for fun.
That's nice. Yeah, because I can't remember who it was. I had a guest on my podcast recently, and it might have been Bobby Mayer, and he just went, I have no idea what you think about anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't express anything. I don't, you know, it's just not my thing.
Yeah, because you can sort of, not that I'm not saying people should do this or would, but you could easily with you watch one of your jokes, turn around, have a conversation with your mate for 2 minutes, jump back in, and you haven't missed you have missed something, of course, but you haven't got a catch up. Fly me, right?
2 minutes. Everyone's still laughing from the first one, so it's fine.
You're still looking for that bit of paper.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark.
Yes.
There's been a knock at the door.
Yes.
It's the first guest of the evening. It's your live guest. So who's at the door?
I feel like I need to... So basically, this has made me so anxious, this process. I genuinely had an anxiety dream last night because of this. I find it so... I explain why. Sorry, we've been recording ages and you probably just want to get to it. But so I'll tell you about my anxiety dream first, if you want to hear about it.
Yeah, please. I was going to say, I want to know.
It's a bit of a weird one. So my usual anxiety dream is like someone's attacking like a house or something, and then you have to get out and you escape and you're running, right?
Oh, okay. That's fun.
And yeah, they are quite fun, actually. They're a bit like a Bourne movie.
Yeah.
Sort of jump in. That tends to be what they look like. And then, but also I sometimes need a wee in the night as well. So as well as running away, you're also looking for a toilet. It's all sort of mixed in.
Yeah.
And then for some reason I was with the guy from Superbad. Who's that? The chubby
Jonah
guy.
Hill. Oh, yeah, Michael Cera. Oh, Jonah Hill. Yeah.
Yeah. Jonah Hill. And he got hit by a car like he does in that film.
Oh, yeah.
He rolls out the windscreen. And in the dream, it was hilarious. Like it was proper funny. Like everyone, it was just like this lovely, joyous moment. And I woke up. I don't know what that means.
Was it Jonah Hill or is whoever's driving the car is the guest you've chosen? Or is that
neither? Neither. but that sums up the process because I'm just struggling. Going through this. Do other people have this trouble? Like proper, like I find, I think it says a lot about me.
I've never had anybody tell me about the fact that I've caused them anxiety and anxiety dreams.
I felt like the whole process of this, I feel like I've given myself therapy because this was like one point I literally said to myself, what's wrong with you?
Like, Jesus Christ.
because it's just brought back loads of stuff. This is turning into like a
mental health podcast. I finally scratched behind the surface.
Yeah. This is it. This is the one. You're going to have to send
scratch behind the surface. Scratch below the surface, peeked behind the curtain. I went for scratch behind the surface.
No, I was fine with it. So basically, I just couldn't. Like, from what I've listened to other people's, they had people that they were like, I'd love to meet that guy. That's the guy I've always wanted to meet. That person is coming. But I don't have that. Like, I've got no, there's lots of, I even literally Googled famous people, right? I did that, right, for inspiration. And I was looking through, and I was just going, like, all these people, I'd be like, yeah, that'd be quite nice to meet. Yeah, Elvis. Yeah, sure, I'd meet Elvis. Why not? Like, Bobby Moore. Yeah, I wouldn't mind meeting Bobby Moore. But I wasn't Tom Cruise. I'd love to meet Tom Cruise. But like, there was no one excited me at all. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah. So I don't know if you remember, Mark, that 4 minutes ago I asked you who's at the door. The anticipation. But ultimately, before you name them, all we know is you're not really that bothered, and they were just probably the seventh page on a Google search.
No.
The famous people.
No, I'd already decided who I was going for then, but I was disappointed in my choices a bit. So I was like, I need to look to see. Anyway, sorry. And I went for a walk. I'm talking too much. I went for a walk with my dad earlier. And I was talking to him about it, so I was struggling. And then he just reeled his off, bang, bang, bang. And I was like, what is wrong with me?
Can he come on?
Well, exactly. He'd be better. Do you all know who he picked? I'll tell you. He went for Michael Caine, alive.
Lovely.
He went for Gene Hunt from Ashes to Ashes.
Oh, okay. Oh.
But he's literally just discovered. It's just, it's basically,
oh, the character, the fictional character.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
So basically, because he's from this, like, he's just discovered that show, and because my dad loved the 70s, that's why he was
right
there, I think.
Great. Yeah.
And then for Dead, he chose basically Dave Allen, if it was like a fun night. Oh,
yeah.
And then Richard the Third.
It's always been one or the other.
Because he wanted to know the truth about some of the history or something. I don't know. Anyway, so that just made me think, what, I don't know. So, like, for example, you asked about 10 minutes ago the question. Sorry, I'll just let it all out. This is so weird.
My anxiety dream tonight is me going, there's a fire in my house, and I'm going, Mark, have you seen my phone? I need to call the fire brigade. And you're going, the funny thing is, the other day, actually, I couldn't find my phone. And I'm going, Mark, where is it? You're like, my dad always knows where his phone is.
But this is a prime example. I worked at a cinema, and I served Paul McCartney quite a lot of times, right?
Right, and, is you saying you were on box office, then you ran around to popcorn, and then you ran around to take his ticket.
So I wasn't excited about that at all. It meant nothing to me. And then it's only in recent years where like I've heard like Rob Brydon, like when I supported him on tour, and he would talk about me to like Paul McCartney, like that was the biggest thing he'd ever. It's like, what? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's not, wasn't my era. But I think now I realise that's quite a cool thing.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I think he had nachos.
Oh. I mean, the fact you can't even remember.
Right, anyway. So, first person. Ready?
Go on.
Okay, so these are based on...
Oh, my God.
Conversation. Things I want to talk to people about, right?
Great. That's a good angle.
Okay. Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Right. Yeah, you're into wrestling.
I am. I'm into wrestling a lot.
I've never known him be addressed as that before.
That's his full name, yeah.
I
wanted something wrestling related there. And I was thinking I could go for The Rock, because The Rock would be quite cool because he's got the whole, he's a superstar, but also he's got the wrestling background. There's lots of talk about that. We probably have a workout. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. But I think with Vince McMahon, he's one of those people that because like with wrestling and talking about the business, like if you're into wrestling, some of the best bits is learning about what's going on backstage, like the backstage stuff. And lots of wrestlers and people that used to work for WWE have like released podcasts and they spill the beans and it's all like, are they telling the truth? But really, but he's the only guy that there's no access to. Do you know what I mean? He's the only person in wrestling that you really could never meet. Like the Undertaker, right? Mm. If you pop down to the morgue and like you might meet him, like you might see him walking around where he lives, but you would never ever
or driving past you the wrong way,
just undertaking me.
Lovely,
great stuff. I just think he's one of those people that just is like he's never really done interviews or anything. So I'd hope that he would be open to talk about everything. But he's the only person that really, really knows the inner workings, because the other people, he's the boss. And also, because, like, he's an amazing guy, as in success-wise, like what he's done is insane.
Yeah, and it's almost like I'd say, although this guy has done interviews in sort of a comedy way, he's like Lorne Michaels. Created SNL and has done so much and launched so many careers. But he has done a little bit. I think he's done like a Comedians in Cars and he's done a couple of podcasts. But it was actually recently I watched Beyond the Mat.
Great. See, that is a prime example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and actually in that I was so impressed that he was the one who, I think, did he do something? And I don't understand business at all. He made it like a public company or something, or he launched them to go even bigger. And then you see him in there and you realize this guy is just a go-getter, and he has I don't think I've ever used that term, but that is what he is. And he's like, he's in there, he's directing the wrestlers before they go out, and he's telling them, you're going to do this. And then he's in a business meeting, and then he's with this guy who can like throw up, and he's like offering him a contract. And backstage watching these two guys who are trying out, and he knows everything we like, everything we don't like, what we need to work on. He's clearly,
he doesn't sleep. That's a thing. He doesn't sleep, and he's like all the wrestlers say how he's in the gym at like 2 a.m. after a show. Right. He'll go and work out, and then like it's one of those. He's just an enigma. This bloke, like it's because he took over his dad's company, and then he was back then. Wrestling was in territories in the different states and areas, and then he was the first one to go national with it, and then global. And
amazing.
Like there's like a WWE network where it's just got all of everything that's ever been on WWE. It's like a subscription thing. But apparently he had this idea of this, like this, basically Netflix. He had the idea that there'd be this sort of network of stuff. In the 90s, he had this idea and the foresight. And then he bought lots of footage from other companies because he knew eventually it would be useful.
Wow.
So it's just, I think he'd be fascinating. I don't think he'd be fun. Like, I don't think it would be a fun party with him there. And I feel like he'd be quite awkward socially.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that. But I can imagine he would bring a lovely bottle of something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he'd probably just, he'd sit back. I reckon he could tell you things maybe after a drink. He would loosen up. Mm.
And I felt like if a conversation went on something he didn't know about, I think he'd lose him. I think...
He'd put you for a table. Great choice.
I want choices that no one else has done either. Have you had any sort of double up yet?
There's been a few. Victoria Wood is quite a common one.
Is it? Yeah, yeah.
But I imagine it will start to happen, especially with comedians. You know, I'm surprised a lot more people haven't gone for sort of Richard Pryor yet.
Yes. Oh, okay. But some people, I think, don't want to go for the obvious choices.
That's it. Yeah. Today. Yeah.
I'd assume Richard Pryor would have come up already.
So I think somebody went for Eddie Murphy because they didn't want to go for the obvious, which was Richard Pryor. Yeah. And I was like, well, that's still quite obvious.
Yeah.
he's not exactly gone the other way. There's been another knock at the door.
Oh, can't wait.
It's Second guest of the evening, it's the dead guest.
Yeah.
So who's at the door?
Okay, so I wanted a comedian, I think. And, mm-hmm. and the thing with comedy, because we're comedians, any comic that's alive, there's a good chance we might meet them at some point.
Yes, I've spoken about this before, actually, the fact that we can move in circles. In fact, I spoke about the fact that Robin Williams had done a gig in Kingston outside the box.
Yeah.
It can happen. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. You haven't gone from Richard Pryor, have you?
No. So my first thought was Tommy Cooper, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Just legend. And, you know, I really liked him when I was a kid. But I thought he's like that natural funny thing. I thought I'm not going to learn anything from him being there, I don't think. So I'm going for Bob Monkhouse.
Lovely.
He's like basically, so my podcast, as you know, is about writing jokes.
Yeah.
He would be my dream guest on that.
Oh.
Because a lot of people think of Bob Monkhouse as...
Great reason to choose him.
Yeah, a lot of people think of it as like a game show host. Mm. But he wasn't really... That was after. Like, he was a proper comic. And a proper comic of those times that wrote his own stuff. And just... Because they had that whole, you know, that... Do you remember that whole thing when he lost his joke book? It was like front page news.
Yeah.
Imagine a comic losing his joke book now. That's not front page news, is it?
It's like, that's like 10 retweets.
Yeah.
Have you seen this book?
So I just think he'd be fascinated to talk to about joke writing and just comedy in general. Because he was like the one of the sort of first proper known comics that were writers. Like, I wasn't even a big fan, not even a big fan of his as an act, really. Do you know what I mean? Because he's coming from the era of those old school jokes, like Irishman, Scotchman. I don't think he really did that stuff. Maybe he did in the early days a bit, but it moved on quite a bit. And I know that he knew Kevin, you know Kevin McCarthy? Oh, of course you do.
Yes, yeah.
Who's one of my favourite people in comedy.
Yeah.
He was friends with him, and I've often picked his brain about him, because Kevin was on one of the talent shows that Bob Monkhouse hosted back in when Kevin first started. So it's like something like Opportunity Knocks or something like that.
It was something like that. Then they became basically famous overnight. Right, you did that on the Saturday night, and if you won that or something.
So he stayed in contact with Bob Monkhouse, and even right to just before he died, they sort of went for dinner and stuff. So, and he'd always say how he's always talking about jokes. And I was just really jealous. Like, I'd love to
amazing.
I'd love to pick that brain. Like, he wrote arguably my favourite joke. I think it's one of the best jokes ever written.
Go on.
Can you guess, do you know any of his ones?
No, I was going to say, actually, that the only video I can think of him doing stand-up is the one that went viral a few years ago where they took the laughter out and it was just quite dark.
Oh, really? I haven't heard
I think it was sort of quite racist.
Oh, God. No. I'll take it back. Change my mind. Edit. Tommy Cooper. Oh, no. Okay, well, I've never seen that, and I've never heard that. Like, because that would have been...
I think you sent it to me.
I think I wrote it for him.
It just cut. There was no laughter there. It just cut to you laughing.
That's it. So, okay. So, have you ever seen? Ignore that bit.
Sorry. That's right. This joke's not racist.
Imagine. No, it's not. Because I would never put him in that group. But I suppose if everything's socially acceptable, then maybe he would have.
Yeah. I think what it is when you take the laughter, which people have actually, like, in his defence, I can't even remember what he's saying, but I'd say that without the laughter, it was quite weird because it cuts the audience sort of sat there as though he's, like, dying on his arse, and they're sort of going... But people have done the same with Friends. You know, the scenes from Friends where they take the laughter out and it just seems really weird, everything they're saying, because it is out of context. I mean, if you stood up in a room and started saying the things you say, it would... I mean, you'd look mad, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But I also think that he...
Not me, it'd always be in context. People would go, well done, he was like a genius and people didn't realise, but...
But I feel like he would have moved with the times. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like
I've seen,
for example, like that video of him. Did you see the thing where he his last gig? Must have seen that. How really? Oh, you'll love it. So basically, his last ever gig he put on. It's on YouTube, I think. It was on BBC, and he basically invited comics. So comics of all levels filled the audience, and you look through, you'll see loads of circuit comics that you know. And it was just him doing jokes. It's like an audience with, but it's just all comedians in a dark club. It's great. It's really good to watch.
So what year was this?
I can't remember, but I think at the end he told them that he was dying or something like
that.
I might have just made that up, but I feel like he hadn't got long left. I think he knew that he hadn't got long left, so he wanted to do this gig. And that's what I love as well is it goes all the fame, the TV, it came down to bit comedy in a club with other comics that he wanted to do. And I just feel like that's such a nice way to go out, that last gig. So the joke, my favourite joke of his, is the one, you would have heard it. It's, I've got to remember it now. When I told people I wanted to be a comedian, they laughed. They're not laughing now. That is the perfect joke.
Yes, yes. And used in The Joker.
Right, I was going to go on to this.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a number of things. It's used in The Joker. So the Joker is on stage and he's doing that joke. So my biggest bugbear with it is they sold it like it's a bad joke.
Yes.
Like it was sold. He was dying. And this was an example of him doing badly. It's one of the best jokes ever written, I think.
And also, in the film, doesn't then somebody heckle and sort of go, we're not, or something, or sort of...
Exactly. So they've almost taken the joke at face value.
Yeah, yeah, as though it wasn't a joke. Yes, yeah, so it completely. It makes no sense.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, but I'm assuming they didn't have permission to use that joke. I can't imagine that Bob Monkhouse's family would have said, "Yeah, use that joke and undermine that joke." Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm surprised because Gary Goldman is the comedian who brings them on, right? And Gary Goldman's a very sort of proper comedian and a sort of a, I guess you'd say, a comedian's comedian, and he's sort of. So he's there. So I was also surprised that he sort of allowed it to happen and didn't step in and say this.
Maybe
this
he didn't know. I mean, like, I don't know if that would have came across because back then there's no YouTube, so maybe there wouldn't have been.
Yeah, but it's just that really really annoyed me more so than the fact they used a Gary Glitter song in the film. Both annoyed me. I can't stress that enough. But
did you know it was a Bob Monkhouse joke?
I think I would have actually. I think, but I would have probably credited it to one of those lots.
Yeah, yeah.
Not racist, old school comedians.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I would have said I would have assumed it was somebody around then. I think I probably could have guessed it was his. But yeah, that is it. That is perfect joke.
Mm. Yeah,
and butchered and you're right, used terribly.
I think stand-up in films is bad anyway because for me it can't work because with a film script, if you want you want the audience to think one thing or another. So if you want them to think that this act is having a good gig, then it has to be a joke that everybody gets. But comedy is subjective, so it can't be. So I just don't think that ever works because like Adam Sandler one. What's the one without? It got panned a bit.
Funny People.
I really liked it. Yeah,
I really like it. Yeah,
yeah. But the stand up is terrible because Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen, yeah.
So he's doing stand up and he's meant to be smashing it or dying. But I've got a different opinion to what the script wants because I don't think what he's saying is funny. But he's meant to be funny. I feel like it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's hard to get across what, apart from them giving us an audience that's laughing, but the angle could be this guy's a hack and the audience are lapping it up. It's hard to know. And considering how many comedians were involved in that film, and, Judd Apatow, who did stand-up, Seth Rogen did stand-up, Adam Sandler did stand-up. I think Jonah Hill, in fact, I recently watched an interview with Jonah Hill where he was being interviewed to say that he went and did stand-up Jada Patel made them go and do it for a couple of months before the film. And he said he was like horrendous at it. He was so bad. And he came off stage at the Los Angeles Comedy Store and Louis CK was there. And he said, like, can you give me some tips? And Louis was like, he goes, honestly, it was horrible. Like, I can't give, like, I don't know what to do with you. He said he just didn't have it.
It was funnier in my dream. Who would have thought Jonah Hill would have come up twice in this podcast and not be one of my suggestions?
What would you do if you had one question to ask him?
Bob Monkhouse.
No, Jonah Hill. Yeah.
How's your back? He got hit really hard by that car. Oh, one question. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably like to know. I would treat it like my podcast. I'd like to him to give me an example of a joke that he couldn't get to work, and then let's have a chat about it.
Perfect answer.
Is that right? Yeah.
Perfect.
Because that'd be interesting, because that is how I would get to the real crux of his knowledge. Because there's no point in him telling me a joke that works. I'd also show him the Joker and see what he says. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to see his reaction to that. I assume he would hate that.
Yeah, good to bring him back and then sort of really rile him up.
Oh, yeah, just push and do that. Yeah, good point.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, there's been another knock at the door.
Yes,
it's the third and final guest of the evening, unless Jonah Hill turns up. It's your it's your fictional guest. So who's at the door?
This is the one I think you might have guessed. I don't believe you've guessed any of the others. Mr. Miyagi.
Right, you love The Karate Kid.
I love The Karate Kid. It's my favourite film. And Mr. Miyagi is one of the most underrated characters in cinema. I think he is one of the best characters that has ever been portrayed. And did you know Oscar nominated for that role?
Oscar nominated, yeah, he was. Yeah, which is incredible, isn't it, really, to think that as like a children's film anyway, to get...
Mm. All right, hang on, easy. It's a cartoon. Such a lot of hidden depth to that film. I've got a little fact about it. So the reason it was nominated, when was the last time, do you know the film well? I imagine you probably
I'd say I've watched it. I think I've watched it since like the pandemic.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, because it went on Netflix. Did you watch Cobra Kai?
I haven't watched Cobra Kai yet. Oh, no, sorry.
Mate, I feel sorry for you.
That's the closest I've ever seen you to angry. Your lips
went
tight.
Got all the emotions out of me today. But it's good to watch The Karate Kid original and then go and watch. And it holds up. It is, like, it's a really good film. Like, the amount of people I've said to, like, you should watch The Karate Kid. And then the natural reaction is, what? The Karate Kid? Is that sort of, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You watch it. It's got everything. It's a really well-made 80s film.
I understand what you mean by underappreciated, which is mad to say when you think about the fact that everybody knows who he is and everybody knows Wax On, Wax Off. Or is it Wax Off, Wax On?
Wax on, wax off.
You can't take off.
That might have kind of ruined it a little bit because he's just remembered for wax on, wax off, which is only a very. It's probably the most ludicrous part of the character. It's those bits.
When actually there's a lot going on there, isn't there? You get a lot of sort of story of who he is. More than I think you'd remember.
There's a scene where he gets right in the middle of it. He and Daniel are like much closer in that kind of father son sort of like dynamic. And he gets drunk, and then there's a scene where Daniel sort of turns up and he's drunk, and it's the anniversary of his wife's death when he was in the war, he won like a Medal of Honor, and then like she died whilst giving birth to their child, and they both died, and this is a children's film. like it's so intense, and the acting, like he is the emotion, and the watery eyes and the way he delivers it, and he's drunk at the time, it's a perfect piece of acting. And that apparently is what got him nominated for the Oscar, is that scene. Wow. And that scene as you can imagine, that scene very nearly got cut from the whole film. Like I can't remember exactly who, but someone was like, it's not the vibe of the film. It's like, it's meant to be a children's kind of uplifting, and it's quite a dark moment. Yeah. And then apparently the director, I think, fought to keep that in. And it's the best scene of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
Just and imagine that never went in and never.
I assumed that I just sort of didn't almost, when I was younger watching it, just sort of didn't accept that scene. Just sort of, you just washed over me. To me, probably, it's going to sound horrendous, but at 8 years old, you'll forgive me, was the boring bit.
I 100% would have fast-forwarded through it when I was a kid.
Definitely. Yeah. But of course you do. You've got no emotion.
I think you've discovered I have got some emotion. It's very well hidden.
But he, what year was that film? Like 84?
Yeah.
So 85 Oscars?
Oh, good question. 85. I don't, I should know the answer to that as a geek, but no, I don't know that.
I'm just wondering what he sort of lost to.
I have looked that up before, actually.
Would it be, is it the Killing Fields? Oh, who was the guy in that?
I think it was, mate. No. Oh, Pat Morita. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the winner was the Hang S. Ngor. I don't know who that is. In the Killing Fields, yeah.
Wow. But, I mean, to get nominated is huge.
I mean, that must have been so unexpected. Because you know he was a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. I remember watching it.
Because he's so... It makes you appreciate the acting, because he's got an American accent when he's doing stand-up. And I'm like, no, I want you to be Mr. Miyagi. And it shows how good he was for that, because it's so believable. And they didn't want him, actually, as the actor originally, because they didn't want it to be funny. They didn't want a comic actor to do it. But that adds so much to the character, because it's such subtle comedy.
I wonder what that did to his career, stand-up career afterwards. You know, like Tim Allen was obviously quite like a blue comedian, and then suddenly he had people watching Home Improvement, and then he was suddenly selling out these theatres. And the stories of him having to give, and him happily doing it, giving families money back because he's talking about like rude things, and they brought their children along and they weren't expecting it.
That's so funny.
Because he talked about the fact that he used to do, like, he was on the road and it was quite a tough gig, so he would do the whole, like the machine, the thing he did. Mm. He did it to get people's attention so they could at least remember that's the guy that did the noises.
Right.
Got a sitcom off of it and became this sort of family guy, which is just not what he was. Yeah. Sort of Ardlo Hanlon having a similar thing with Father Ted, where it was quite sort of hard-hitting or sort of like anti-religious comedy, which I know Father Ted is obviously quite anti, but it's he said it was families coming up. Actually, what he did wasn't as sort of family friendly.
Yeah, I was always disappointed in his stand-up because it wasn't Dougal.
It was
I loved that character when I was a kid.
But I wonder if it sort of helped him. Did he sort of become more known as a stand-up after it?
I don't know, because my nan did that. She loved Big Break.
What?
So she loved Big Break.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think what the comparison with what your nan did was. No,
she went to watch Jim Davidson live, and then just like, it just really uncomfortable because she had no idea what his stand-up was, but she liked Big Break.
So yeah. You and your nan are quite similar with your tastes.
Unbelievable. So I all the footage of him doing stand-up is before.
Maybe he didn't really do it.
I think he just acted afterwards. Because wasn't he in something else, like a really well-known sitcom as well back then?
Yes, he was in Happy Days, wasn't he?
He was in Happy Days, yeah. So maybe he just got into acting and then didn't carry on.
Well, some people do that over here. You know, they're not in it for the not the purists. I assume I know the answer. But what's your favourite of the films?
Number one is the best.
Yeah. Great. So I guess him from that film is the one that's coming.
And I'd like to watch Cobra Kai with him as well, because it's been made very respectfully to his character. Like, it's still his character is still the heart of.
Oh, that's lovely.
So, and I think Ralph Macchio, who plays Daniel LaRusso, the film means a lot to him, I think. So he, and also Pat Morita did as the actor. Did as well. So I think he wouldn't take on any projects that he was offered until he sort of knew that the heart of it was right. And it is.
That's amazing.
It's brilliant. It's one of the best TV shows. Yeah, the three producers of it and writers are major fans.
They should do that every time. Yeah, it blows my mind that they didn't do that with, like, when they do it with Star Wars. You can see the difference.
And also that's why Mandalorian's so great, isn't it? Because
I haven't watched it.
Haven't you? All right.
But I always thought Jon Favreau should get the films back when they said they could relaunch them. I'm surprised they didn't give it to him.
Yeah,
because. Because he's phenomenal and he's done so well. And I haven't watched it yet, but everyone just says he's done so well with it. And being like, and not a fan, it's like a super fan. It should always be that.
I've actually done that with, done it with Mighty Ducks as well. Did you see Mighty Ducks as a series?
No, but at the same time that I would have watched Karate Kid, I also rewatched Mighty Ducks and I thought it was horrendous.
The film doesn't stand up, but the series, it's a kids' show. Like, my nephews will watch that, but it's fun, and it has the same kind of thing of it's little Easter eggs from the old films and stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah,
it's well made, and it's quite.
What's that on?
Disney Plus.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see. Yeah, because the Cobra Kai was on YouTube, wasn't it? And then Netflix picked it up.
Yeah, yes, for the third series.
Yeah.
The first two went on to YouTube and then they sold it to Netflix.
Isn't it incredible how massive YouTube is? Yet the idea of sort of watching a show on there is, to me, the equivalent of Cobra Kai going on YouTube at the start. I sort of wrote it off a bit because of it. It's the equivalent of it coming back and going on Channel 5.
Yeah. I know this is quite a commitment, but watch number 1, 2, and 3.
Because
by the time you get to the third series of Cobra Kai, there are references from all of them, or especially the first two.
Yeah.
And you get so much more out of it if you can remember the little things that happen.
Oh, lovely.
There you go. I feel like we might have been quite niche with these, but I hope people have been interested.
No, it's been great. And you've done, considering the anxiety you had, your choices have been incredible. True to you.
Well, that's it. I think, I went for the people I want. It's not like, oh my God, it's this person. It's a bit from this band. It's so excited. Like, I genuinely would have great conversations with these people, I think.
And I imagine, actually, especially Vince McMahon and Mr. Miyagi, I reckon they'd have some stuff to chat about.
I'd love to see what happens. I just heard a podcast and one of the wrestlers had gone to his house. And like, this is how big a deal it is with Vince McMahon. Like, it's such a big story. They went to his house. Like, it's a huge thing. And everyone wants to know, what's it like? And apparently they brought out homemade brownies and Vince McMahon had two. And the wrestler, he was offered the second one. Because I think it was Chris Jericho. And the wrestler hadn't signed with him. It was like this big thing. He'd come from WCW. And it was like, the whole thing was like, it seemed like he thought it was like a test. And then Vince McMahon offered him another brownie. And he was like, if I take a brownie, what's the vibe here? Is it like, if I have a brownie, does he think I'm fat and I shouldn't, do you know what I mean? Or is it, hey, we're matey, let's go both
don't
ways.
Don't say no if he offers you a brownie. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. But he went for it and it worked out.
I was going to say, God knows what you'd do there. I imagine you just sort of run out the window and never go back. Just jump out the window, run off.
Oh,
right.
Oh, God, do you see that?
Is that your headphones jumping out?
That's, I told you.
You can't hear me.
I told you I didn't want to put bloody headphones in.
Sorry.
I got excited and I just...
Did you watch the film with Vince Vaughn in the wrestling film? Fighting With My Family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great film. And I'll tell you why.
It's really good.
So my girlfriend at the time, so my last girlfriend, like when we met, our first date, actually, weirdly, I took her to watch wrestling, right? Because it was just, we were meant to go on a date, but I had these tickets. And then I was like, someone dropped out. I think it might be Sean dropped out, actually. And I was like, oh, I'm going to this thing. Anyway, so she came and it was like a bit weird for her. She's like, what the fuck's this wrestling? And she wasn't convinced by wrestling. And then this film came out. And what's great about this film is it explains, because the thing is, if you love wrestling since you're a kid, you just get it. You just understand. But if you're not in that world, you think it's a weird thing. But this film explains everything at a basic level of why it's good. And it is fake, but it's
choreographed,
it's athletic, and it's storytelling. Yeah. And since then, she was interested after that. So I think it's a good film to sort of get people into it.
Oh, perfect. And an amazing story. How was it The Rock was in a hotel room watching a documentary about the actual family?
Yes.
And
and
decided he had to make the film.
Family from Norwich, their daughter.
Yeah.
They ran a wrestling school and their daughter got into WWE and is super famous now.
Because it is almost like, it's such a good story that it's almost like you'd imagine it to be, the fiction would be that sort of story, a real proper rags to riches.
Yeah, yeah.
And the brother sort of getting left behind. So it's full of spoilers now. But it's Florence Pugh, isn't it? And she's a Florence Pugh is the actor in it. She plays the wrestler.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard of her before, but I've recently been watching loads of crime dramas lately in lockdown. That's just a fad I'm in at the moment. And she's in one. So I'll cut that out. That's not interesting. Next. That's the worst story anyone's ever told.
Oh, she's in.
Basically, all I've told you is she's an actor. She's not a wrestler, Jake. Just want you to make it clear, she's not a wrestler.
She's in Midsummer, and she's now dating Zach Braff. And I think she was in Little Women. I think, I believe she was Oscar nominated.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes, that's, yeah, I think so, yeah.
There you go. So I salvaged it.
A good story now, because a bit of information, yeah.
This is the part now where I go through who I chose for you.
Okay, yeah, I feel, because of what I said at the beginning, I feel like it was almost impossible for you. I feel like you might have got Miyagi, but other than that, I don't think so.
We'll find out. Right. For Alive, I actually went with... because I was thinking that. I was thinking about which comedians did I think would sort of influence you and who I thought that you would have maybe been a fan of. And again, because they're so accessible that we can meet these people, a lot of them I think that would have influenced you, you maybe have met or you very easily could. So I went with Jonah Hill.
imagine that was your, you'd be like Derren Brown. That'd be such a great reveal. The whole time you'd made me say Jonah Hill. Like when we first met, you were just putting these seeds of Jonah Hill seeds. Every time I think of you,
like the password for the Zoom call was like JNHLL. And you're just like, yeah, fine. And I was saying stuff to her. Do you want to go first? Yeah. Ooh, yeah, he's a bit over the hill, isn't he? Do you want to just dropping it in? I actually went with Steve Martin.
Oh.
Because his stand-up was, I mean, it's in a nice term, was sort of like irreverent. Is that the right words?
I didn't even consider that, but I'd like that.
And he as a comedian, he's as far away from us now. But and the fact that he doesn't really do it anymore, or doesn't do it anymore, that you wouldn't really, you're never going to really cross paths. And he was so big. His story is incredible.
His book is amazing.
I've rebought it because I'd lost it. So I bought Born Standing Up. And I'm making sure, in fact, I can start reading it now because I bought it in lockdown because I really started to like consume lots of comedy and comedy interviews and stuff during lockdown because I was missing comedy so much. And I was about to read it and I thought, this is actually going to make it worse. So now I've got my first gig back on the 1st of May. So I'm going to read it now this week get back into it.
I think that is the best stand-up book. Like the only thing that would make it better for me would be if he'd started in this country and I knew the places. Do you know what I mean? But the story is amazing. And there's very little footage of his stand-up back then.
And it's like, almost when you watch it, it doesn't really make sense. It was so sort of, because at the time, a bit like what we said about you earlier, people do say what I've sort of heard about it was sort of rallying against everything else. He was deliberately being stupid. He was deliberately like playing and saying, you know, this is the completely opposite of what comedians are saying right now. And everybody just got the joke to the point where he was filling stadiums with it.
Yeah. Crazy filling stadiums with blue animals.
yeah. Like an arrow through his head.
Yeah. But like, and that's around the time of, I would guess that Monty Python were doing the same thing over here. What wouldn't you do?
Thing. And just incredible that it got so big. But him there in the white suit with the bunny ears, it's like ridiculous. But I guess it was all against all those big sort of hard hitting, maybe like Carlin, I guess. Would that have been around then he was going up against?
Maybe. But is that example in America, like what we were saying earlier, that one, a lot of these big stand-ups don't carry on doing stand-up. They go into movies.
No.
Like Eddie Murphy, like all these people. I don't know what that is. Do you think it's because at that level you've gone so high you can only make it worse?
I think it must be. It's only downhill from here. And it was just...
Don't need to keep doing it, mate. I know your game now.
For dead, I went with Pat Morita.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow, because that was a decision I made of...
Oh.
Like, I had to make a decision. I didn't want both of them. That'd be silly, but...
Right. Like,
he was my first on both lists, and I had to decide, would I prefer Miyagi, or would I want... the actor. And I did, one of the strengths of the actor was because he's a stand-up. I thought you could talk about that as well.
But I assumed it was one or the other, which is why my fictional choice was Mr. Miyagi.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Like that?
Like, well done. Yeah, that's great. Edged your best.
So yeah, because I thought...
Yeah, well, I wondered whether you would pick Ralph Macchio.
Right.
That character as well. I knew you'd go Karate Kid with something because I talk about it too much. I mean, I had considered having all characters from Karate Kid.
Right, that wouldn't surprise me.
I thought that would limit what we could talk about. So I thought, for the sake of your podcast, I'll choose some different people.
But it's a fantastic choice. We now have the hardest part of the podcast where we have to pick which one goes through to the ultimate dinner party. So we've got Vince McMahon, Bob Monkhouse and Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
Who do you want to put through?
It's not hard.
Usually it's hard. And as I was doing it, I was thinking, we all know who this is going for.
And I feel like everyone there, what I'm thinking is, I don't know who's, like, I've only seen a few, but like whoever's there, when Mr. Miyagi walks through the door, surprise, everyone is going to really enjoy that moment that he comes in. I think their reaction would be like, it's Mr. Miyagi. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Wow, Mr. Miyagi's here.
Yeah, and even anybody there who hasn't seen the film would probably still appreciate the fact that he's there.
Yeah.
And it's come up before, I think, with Sean McLaughlin, that even if R2-D2 came in, if you've never seen Star Wars, that would mean something to you.
Well, I mean, it's a robot. Like, wow. That's exciting anyway. Just a robot.
Yeah, that's true. That'd probably blow your mind.
Yeah.
Enough to turn your head. yeah, I think it's one of the easier choices.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, Americans wouldn't know who Bob Monkhouse is, and I feel like the majority of people probably don't know who Vince McMahon is. So I think
yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? He's probably somebody who, even if you didn't know quite who he was, I think a lot of people would know. I know the name, and it's something to do with wrestling, but they probably would maybe think, my mum would probably think he was a wrestler, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Actually, I'm seeing her on Sunday. I'll ask her. I'll let you know.
I love wrestling, and my mum wouldn't know.
Oh,
she would not have a clue who that was. Oh, no, of course not. My dad loves wrestling. Like, he's...
Oh, does he?
He watches as much as I do. Yeah, we...
That's oh, that's nice.
Bonding things.
So when there's the big ones, do you watch it together when there's the big things? Do you, like, record them and watch them? I only said record because I imagine your dad's not staying up till 4 in the morning.
That's true, actually, yeah. No, we won't do that because it's just not practical. But we both watch it and then we'll go for a walk and then we'll chat about it.
Because
he used to take me to the wrestling, the local wrestling. He and my nan used to take my brother and I, and we'd go to Ashford Sports Centre, and they'd have the events, and it'd be a big deal back then. Like, I think we saw Big Daddy once, like, back then.
Oh, really? Well, that's cool. Did your dad get you into it?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's lovely.
And my other granddad, my mum's side, would always be watching the World of Sport Wrestling on a Saturday when I was like 3 or 4, and I really remember sitting there with him just watching the wrestling. So it's always sort of been there.
But despite that, we're going Mr. Miyagi.
But I'm imagining that your other guests haven't picked my dad. So if my dad and my nan were there, maybe I'll go Vince McMahon, but I don't think they are.
Fair point. Where can people find you? The classic end of the podcast.
Very easy on social media at Jokes with Mark, and that's my name on my podcast as well. So at Jokes with Mark, at Jokes with Mark.
And and that is the podcast, and it's very good. And I've done it. If anyone wants to, listen to any episode.
I'd love you to come back on it soon, because I think it's probably been a year since you last.
Oh, I think it's been longer. Yeah.
Well, I'll get back on then. Yeah, if you want to.
I do want to, and I'll be on it very soon. That was Mark. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please remember to rate and subscribe and tell your friends. And as always, I will be back next week with another episode. Bye.
Cosmic sacred pact. I promise teach karate. That to my pact. You promise learn. I say you do. No question.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.